you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. Proud to be your host today. Well, we're going to talk about a few things going around the country and a little bit about your responsibilities for being a gun owner. Now, we know through the Second Amendment and through the D.C. versus Heller that we actually have the right to own guns. Wow. And use them for self-protection if need be, which is exactly what the Founding Fathers, the creators of our Constitution, wanted. That's exactly what they intended. Not only the way that the Second Amendment is written, but simply where it exists. Individual people have what are known as rights. The government has powers. So here's an interesting little tidbit. Some of the people who are anti-gun and didn't believe that the Second Amendment was an individual right failed to look at the whole situation in this light. That is, that the Second Amendment is part of the first 10 amendments, all passed together in the late 1700s, known as the Bill of Rights. Since rights are individual rights for individual people, the Second Amendment, by sheer default, meant it was an individual right for people like you and I. Just simply being part of the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, Second Amendment is an individual right. That's what I've held for many years. Of course, D.C. versus Heller upheld that wise way of thinking, which is exactly what the Founding Fathers, again, the constructors of our Constitution intended, especially if you go back in history and you look at the different papers and the different notes that they wrote about it. In addition to that, you have to realize that anti-gunners will do their very best. People who are actually do just want to have your rights taken away a little bit. It's as though, such as, let's see, a good example, City of San Francisco. They like to call themselves the most tolerant city in America. However, that's if you want to stand up and give your completely left-wing socialist type of views. Stand up on a soapbox, grab a megaphone, and go to town on any street corner. They'll leave you be. But if you want to do the same thing, and you want to talk about family values, you want to talk about Second Amendment rights, you want to talk about freedom of speech towards more of a conservative area, and that is when they're going to knock you off of that soapbox and tell you to shut up. They're very tolerant when it comes to the left-wing ideals, but not with the right-wing, more conservative, family-oriented ideals. Keep in mind also that the folks used to say, anti-gunners would say, well, the Second Amendment is geared towards the National Guard. Interesting little bit of history. The Second Amendment, along with the entire Bill of Rights, was ratified in the late 1700s. The National Guard Act didn't come about until the early 1900s, about 110 years or so, 115 years difference. So the Second Amendment wasn't geared towards the National Guard. It didn't exist. As a matter of fact, the National Guard has existed less than half of the amount of time that the Bill of Rights has existed. So what a false idea that was. All right. We're going to go over some of the things going on around the country. Of course, some of the ideas of the people that want to take away your guns and elicit gun control further. And keep in mind, it's about control. It's not about the guns. So we'll go through some of these things affecting you and your potential rights down the road when it comes to owning guns when we return from the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam's
out here to shoot me. All right, folks, welcome back from the break. Now, we're going to talk just a little bit about terminology. Terminology is one of those things that just drives me nuts when it comes to faulting into bad terms. For instance, a few years back, somebody in Washington decided that the term illegal alien wasn't good anymore. So they came up with the term undocumented worker. Okay, undocumented worker, wonderful. Now, keeping in mind that some 30-plus percent of the people in our prison systems are illegal aliens, these folks in Washington, the very liberal group, would like you to think that they are undocumented workers. They are partly documented prisoners at this point. So undocumented workers is one of those terms that came up from the far left. Now, here's a few others that the anti-gunners on the far left have decided to throw in to our daily mix. And even people who are pro-gun use these, which means they've won. What I would like to do is take them back. And with your help, we're going to do this. How about this? Assault weapon. Now, when I was growing up, assault was a verb. It was an action, something that someone did. Now it's being used as an adjective, a descriptive word. Assault weapon. Now, if there's a vehicle, a type of vehicle that's involved in more accidents, now, we'll take an SUV, right? Sport utility vehicle. Those tend to cause more injury to people in smaller cars than others. So if there's any one, say a larger one, maybe a Suburban or a Tahoe or a Durango or something, would that be an assault SUV? Sounds pretty ridiculous, doesn't it? Same thing with an assault weapon or assault rifle. Now, to me, I happen to own some rifles. I own an AR-15, which everyone who doesn't like guns would like to call an assault weapon or assault rifle. I would like to consider it, and here's your new term, a counter-assault rifle, because that's why I have my gun. I'm not going to use it to assault anyone, but if anyone brings an assault towards me, I will counter it using that particular weapon. That's a counter-assault rifle. In the military, it's referred to as a battle rifle. So assault doesn't get used. The military doesn't use it. They say military-style assault weapons. The military doesn't own any assault weapons. They own battle weapons. They own defensive weapons. They even own some offensive weapons. We do not. We don't own any offensive weapons. We own counter-assault rifles, and the military has battle rifles. Now, the police could have an assault rifle if they're going to go in and serve a search warrant, like, say, a SWAT team. They could use an assault rifle, but we as civilians have counter-assault rifles. Let's use that a little bit. How about another one? And this goes across the board. High-capacity magazine. Now, what do you think when you hear high-capacity magazine? Most people would think it holds more than 10 rounds in a magazine. For instance, one of the guns I own happens to be a Glock. I own a 40 caliber Glock that holds 15 rounds in the magazine. A lot of people would call that a high capacity magazine. In fact, it's not. It is a standard capacity magazine, as opposed to the legislatively mandated reduced capacity magazine, such as what they have in certain states like California. They're not allowed to have a magazine in their gun that holds more than 10 rounds. Okay, so how do we call, what do we call that, just a magazine or a standard capacity? No, that's reduced capacity. It was designed to hold, in the case of my particular Glock I'm speaking of, it was designed to hold 15 rounds. But through legislation, they mandated it can only hold 10. So it's a legislatively mandated reduced capacity magazine, or just simply reduced capacity magazine. My magazine that holds 15 rounds is a standard capacity magazine. So please, adopt those. The only high-capacity magazines I know of, Glock happens to make a 9mm magazine that you can put into any of their 9mm pistols, which would hold 33 rounds, specifically designed for their Glock Model 18, For those of you who don't know what a Glock Model 18 is, it's not available to the public. It is just like the Model 17, but it's got a little selector attached to the slide, which allows it to go into full auto. So with your trigger, you can burst fire it. I have fired a couple of these guns. They fire incredibly high rates of fire. There's very few of them out there. Most people will never even see them. You can go online and search for it, Google, ask.com, somewhere, and look up Glock 18. It'll show you pictures. It'll probably show you the big old magazine. Now, that's a high-capacity magazine, one of the rare ones out there in the world. So let's get into using the proper terminology. My rifle is a counter-assault rifle, and my magazine is a standard-capacity magazine because I live in the free state of Nevada. All right, there are many states out there that have these reduced capacity limits. Of course, Washington, D.C. has passed theirs. State of California, Illinois, I believe Hawaii, New Jersey, I believe they all have the same legislation, which is carrying on what was the federal ban that had a 10-year sunset that went out in 2004, limiting magazines. So for 10 years, we couldn't buy magazines with more than 10 rounds. Thank God that law sunsetted. Matter of fact, I'm a huge fan of every law having a 10-year limit. Reason is, look at how many laws are on the federal books. We're talking hundreds of thousands of laws on the federal books. If they all had a 10-year lifespan, that means that they could keep passing laws at the rate they do now, but in 10 years, about 9.5 years, they're going to have to start looking at them and deciding whether or not that is worth the time to go back to, or we should have new business. Now, my father is very politically active. He is in his early 70s. He's in probably better physical condition than I am, very sharp-witted, great shape, and he's been involved in politics since I was born. Now, my dad came up with a great idea, and that is that Congress shall pass no law until they repeal 10 old ones. Well, a way to do that is to put a time limit on all these laws. Now, the law was put into effect, and the only way that it was going to pass is when they agreed to put a 10-year limit on it. And as it turns out, everybody that voted for that law and made it law, for the most part, a tremendous number of those people lost their seats during the next election cycle in both the House and the Senate. That's actually when the Republicans came in. So the Democrat-controlled House and Senate of now, they remember that quite well, that when passing large-scale gun control, that they risk their jobs in the House and Senate. They risk losing their next election, their reelection. And we need to remind them of this historical fact so that they don't forget it and don't consider passing the latest anti-gun laws. On Wednesday, February 25th, which is just over 5 weeks after Inauguration Day, Barack Obama's new Attorney General, Eric Holder, vehement anti-gunner, he announced that the Obama administration tends to seek what they refer to as a reinstatement of the expired federal, quote, assault weapon ban, right? We're hearing that term again, and impose additional restrictions. Now, this is the same candidate Obama who said, "I'm in September of 2008, I will not take your handguns, I will not take your rifles, I will not take your shotguns." Yet, 5 weeks after inauguration, his Attorney General, Eric Holder, under Obama's direction, wants to do exactly that. We read a partial list of those guns on the ban list on the program yesterday. As President Obama indicated during his campaign, there are just a few related changes he would like to make, and among them would be to reinstate the ban on the sale of assault weapons, Holder said. Now, among them, there are a few changes, and among them are to make this a permanent ban. So that means that this is the tip of the iceberg. Now I got to tell you, with the financial crisis that we're having, with the tearing down of the securities of this country to a pre-9/11 state, which is dangerous for this country, there are many very big issues that this administration and Congress should be tackling. Taking our guns is not one of them, especially if they start relaxing the securities of this country and we have to take security of the country into our own hands if we're walking down the street or having to be going to the store and there's a terrorist act at the mall or at the grocery store or at your Walmart or the parking lot of the 7-Eleven, whatever it may be. And the police aren't there, but you are. And you go in to grab for your gun to save your life and the life of others and end this terrorist act. And your gun isn't there because legislation prevented you from getting it. What are you going to do? Well, in all likelihood, you're going to die or suffer severe bodily injury, or a loved one, family member may die or suffer severe bodily injury because the legislature of this fine country decided that you should not be allowed to have a gun. Or maybe even your local city or county or the state told you you couldn't have one in the car. We are less secure out of our homes than we are in our homes. So to be allowed to carry a gun with us is smart. That's why if you read Justice Scalia's opinion when he wrote it for D.C. versus Heller, that essentially open carry and having a gun on you in this country is legal and proper under the Second Amendment. I encourage you to get a hold of your lawmakers and have them review that and take any of those laws off the books. More when we come back.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back from the break. We're going to continue on a little bit with some of Eric Holder, the new scumbag left-wing attorney general of the United States, part of the Obama administration, to basically take away our rights. Now, based on Holder's testimony during his confirmation hearings before the Senate, the other, quote, changes that the Obama administration will probably be looking for presumably include prohibiting private transfer of firearms and banning most center-fired ammunition as, quote, armor-piercing. Now, folks, I'm actually going to do just a quick bit of calculation here. There are 56 weeks in a year times about 10 years times about 20 hours a week. I have in the last decade put in roughly 11,200 hours in training both myself and students in firearms and defensive tactics. Basically, I concentrate on the defensive nature of firearms. I do certainly some sporting use and whatnot, but over 10,000 hours just in the past decade, basically since about 2000, is roughly what I have put in, considering I used to do that full-time for about five straight years and part-time the first 5 years. And by full-time, I mean 50 to 60 hours a week, about 50 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. So I know that armor piercing, well, you're going to have to put up a piece of steel which is designated as armor plated to the standards of the industry, which would mean a half-inch thick AR-500 piece of steel. And anything that penetrates through that will, by definition of the industry, be armor piercing. Now, to penetrate through a half-inch piece of AR-500 steel is difficult by anybody's measure, even by some rounds, some ammos, which are designed to actually pierce armor. Now, what's the availability of armor-piercing ammunition? Well, it's pretty rough. As a matter of fact, I don't know anywhere where I can go and just buy armor-piercing ammunition that's been loaded up, throw in the gun, and go. I can't just go to some local gun store and do it. Years ago, many years ago, 15-plus years ago, I would see it at some gun shows, but not many. I don't know if you folks live in a freer state than Nevada. Maybe so. There are a couple. Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, very free. I don't know how many gun shows go on in Alaska. I know there are quite a few in Idaho and Arizona. But I have been to gun shows in both Arizona and Idaho, and I never saw any armor-piercing ammunition there. And I don't know anybody who's going to sit there with the expertise and be able to tool armor-piercing ammunition. So that's really a false argument. Also, the private transfer of firearms. You know, it's interesting. The Constitution of the United States guarantees the ability for you and I to do private commerce. Any one individual with any other one individual can buy or sell our own personal goods back and forth, as long as they're legal to begin with. So I legally own a gun. I can sell it to somebody in Missouri or Florida or across the street. I own a toaster oven. I can do the same thing. You've seen eBay. There's no commerce transaction with that. Now, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, we call them ATF or BATF. I just generally refer to them as ATF for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Sounds like a party. They have the authority to be a to enact it's not really legislation. It's rules governing different things that are under their control. So they enact these rules, which are not law. They effectively become law based on the rules. However, they have said that no persons shall transfer firearms across states without going through a licensed gun dealer, a federal firearms licensed dealer, FFL. So what they've done is they've superseded the Constitution that says, no, we don't need that sort of authority. So that's something that has not yet been tested in court. I await the opportunity of it to someday when someone really wants to test it. Or there is the proposed overhaul of ATF actually goes into effect to where it's not as easy for them to just blindly make up any rule that they want. I know several people that have federal firearms licenses that are gun dealers that they get different stuff handed down basically almost on a whim out of the ATF, and they're expected to hop too. Now, I don't blame the individual agents who are part of the ATF. They listen to the people who run their bureaucracy, their agency. And those folks, under the direction of the senators and representatives in Washington, D.C., basically salute and, yeah, boom, we will do what you say. So that's a tough one right there. We're going to go through a couple more things that Holder said, such as we need to have tougher laws because there are guns being sent to Mexico. Well, that's Mexico's problem. We have border security to look at people and cargo coming into this country. Mexico could certainly do the same. They don't look at us when we drive across the border or walk across the border. Why don't they check our IDs or check to see if there's guns going in? More when we come back after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Hi, folks. Welcome back, by the way, to email me any comments that you have on the show. You can email me bill@2aradio.com. Two is in second, A is in amendment, radio.com. Bill at 2aradio.com. By the way, Dave Champion, good friend of mine, he is broadcasting on Republic Broadcasting Network. By the way, you can check out the website at republicbroadcasting.org. He comes on 3 Central, 1 Pacific. And Dave is holding the Dave Champion Show handgun course at Front Sight Firearms Training Facility in Pahrump, just outside of Las Vegas, on Friday, May 15th through Monday, May 18th. It's a four-day course. So if anybody's interested in joining a lot of Republic broadcast listeners to learn the defensive use of firearms in a four-day course, you could add up, you can add a fifth day, if you like, for a 32-state, 33-state concealed weapons permit course on Tuesday the 19th. Those of you who are interested, grab a pen. You can call Dave at his office, which noon central is a good time to begin because Dave fills up his morning with his normal client workload. That number is area code 775-751-0811. The number again, 775-751-0811, and tune into Dave's show, 3 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Okay, with that being said, we want to hit something else on Republic Broadcasting. There's a lot of excellent programming on Republic. If you would like to help spread the word, you can purchase what are essentially generic business cards from Republic. The cost is $8 for 100 cards. It includes shipping. You also get a free bumper sticker. And you can get those by calling 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719. Monday through Friday, 9 to 6 Central Time. Let's get back into a little bit of Obama and his scumbag Attorney General Eric Holder. Now, I refer to him as a scumbag because of this particular issue of the lack of paying attention to Second Amendment rights, not too dissimilar to that of the City Council of Washington, D.C., who got bent over and spanked like a bunch of non-listening babies over their handgun ban. So what they've done is they've decided to enact legislation that would essentially continue their ban by requiring that handguns have different technologies that simply do not exist, such as micro-stamping. That's a wonderful another leftist anti-gun idea. Oh, let's make a gun that'll micro-stamp. Oh, they're not designed to do that, and to retool and reorganize and basically build them to do that would be cost prohibitive, which is just another way of taking away your guns, along with ammunition bans. Now, let's talk about that for just a moment. Ammunition is composed of four parts. You have a shell casing. Inside the shell casing goes powder. At the back of the shell casing is a primer, and then inserted into the top of the shell casing is the bullet. So you've got the casing, the powder, which is also referred to as a propellant, the primer, which ignites the propellant, builds up gases, and then launches the bullet, which sits in the top of the shell casing. So that is composed, that is a round of ammunition. So one of the things we need to realize is, for those of us who have been shooting for some time, we realized about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, that the price of ammunition started going up. The reason being that the materials to make ammunition went up quite a bit, such as the price of brass and the price of copper and the price of lead, because most bullets have a lead core with copper jacketing around it. Not all, but most of them have that. Some are just plain solid copper. Now, a lot of legislation has gone through to really kind of throw that a big curve for the ammunition manufacturers. The state of California has what they call a lead ammunition ban in certain areas of the state. Now, this is what the anti-gunners pitched it as. They said, well, you know, we reintroduced the California condor into the wild. And although they haven't been seen in several areas, the habitat that they might enjoy exists in certain areas. We don't want them out there feeding on animals that have been shot and wounded and die later and consume this lead and potentially get lead poisoning. Like, let's say someone shoots a bunny rabbit, and the bunny rabbit, they can't find the bunny rabbit, or they just leave it, and the coyotes get it, and the coyote eats a little bit of lead, and then the coyote dies from whatever it may be, maybe a bear attack, and the bear leaves some of it, and then the California condor comes down and somewhere along this food chain line finds a piece of lead and eats it. Now, the majority of the places that this lead-free ammunition ban exists, the California condor has never been seen. So it's just another way of saying, well, you can't have that ammo. So thanks to a particular company, Barnes Bullets, out of, I think it's American Fork, Utah. They're in Utah. I believe it's American Fork, Utah, on the I-15 corridor south of Salt Lake City. They make a number of different high-quality rounds. One of the things they do is they make the TSX and a couple other rounds that are all copper, and they have a little bit of a hollow point, so they will mushroom back on. And for a hunting round, that's odd. There are hollow points, but generally that's a form of how the round is made around the lead. This is specifically done so that it won't penetrate through too far. And they make excellent stuff. And they sell their bullets to people who want to hand load. I'm one of them. Or reload. And then they also sell them to other companies who will load this ammunition for them. Winchester's one of them. They have what's called a fail-safe round. And so now you can actually go out there and hunt with all copper rounds until they have a problem with copper, which I'm sure will come down the pike someday. Somebody somewhere in a little think tank wannabe lab is paying some scientist or technician to figure out why copper is bad for the environment, even though it comes directly from the environment. We'll see. Anyhow, so this is just another way of taking away your ammunition. Now, the federal government has done this through the Department of Defense. Now, one of the most expensive things, and really the only thing that's reusable when you shoot, is the brass casing. The brass casing can be resized through a series of a die, and it can be reloaded with a new primer, new powder, and a new bullet. And the casing is the single most expensive part of the round. It also has the most metal in it. So one of the places that these casings have come from has been from once-fired brass from the military. The military gets most of their ammunition, not all, most of it, from a company known as Lake City Ammunition. Lake City makes ammunition for the U.S. military. Now, the military also buys ammunition from other manufacturers. They've done it from PMC, which is precision-made cartridge, which was that's actually a South Korean company that had a place for some time in Boulder City, Nevada. They're now gone, but that was Eldorado Cartridge, made American version of PMC. They would load under military contract. Winchester certainly has. When I was a military contractor doing training for the U.S. Department of Defense, we had a lot of Winchester NATO-spec 9mm ammo and 5.56mm ammo for the handguns and the rifles of the U.S. military. But generally, it's Lake City. Anyhow, what happens is when all that ammunition is fired, there is a mandate to pick up all the brass. And a good portion, a good 85-90% has to be accounted for. If some of it ends up on the ground and they don't pick every single piece of brass up, that's okay. They don't expect you to fire, you know, 126,342 shell casings and expect you to turn around and expect you to turn in all those shell casings. But a good portion, they'd probably want to have about 115,000 of them back. So what's happened is the Department of Defense keeps all these. They generally keep them separate. You have 9mm casings here, 30 caliber casings there, 5.56 casings over there. And when these get to be large, cumbersome lots, what happens is the government accounting office, through the liquidation center, sells these. So a new regulation appears to have come down that the Department of Defense is going to require whoever purchases these through the competitive bid process, they must destroy them to the point where they cannot be reused, reloaded, either on DOD property or off-site with DOD personnel observing and certifying that these shell casings can't be used. Now, there's a company in South Dakota by the name of Black Hills Ammunition. They sell different ammunition, the stuff that comes in the blue box. They're 5.56mm or 223, what you would put into an AR-15. That ammunition, the shell casings, are all once-fired military brass. So it's higher-quality stuff, once-fired, all from the military. And that's what they load in their blue box. So they load an entire series of ammunition using this. They will get a hold of this brass and clean it up, remanufacture it with new loaded ammo, and it's probably the single best quality remanufactured rifle ammunition I have personally ever shot or come across. Well, folks, Black Hills and their Blue Box and every other company that does that, as long as this regulation exists, is no longer going to be allowed to do that. Because now this brass is going to have to be sent to recyclers and smelters to be melted down and then made into shell casings again, adding tremendous amount of time and cost involved. So that would be the same idea if the government takes vehicles they don't want to use anymore, and instead of selling them to the benefit of the the financial benefit of the government itself, who operates in the red constantly, and to the benefit of society to have, to the general public, to have, cheaper automobiles and whatnot to be able to drive, what they're going to do is they're going to require this stuff be destroyed so it can't enter back into the market easily. And the same thing is with ammo cans. When an ammo can is done being used, those have always been sold off in lots on pallets, and people buy them, and they go into your Army-Navy store, your surplus store, just out there in the marketplace. That's a great way to carry around things, not just ammo. Now, I've got sandbags that I put in mine. You know, if I'm going to go to the range, I got an ammo box that's got sandbags in it. I've got ammo boxes that have stuff in them that have nothing to do with shooting. They're good to have. I prefer the 30 caliber ammo cans because they are a good size. Well, evidently, Department of Defense has a new regulation to where those need to be destroyed as well. They're not going to be allowed in the marketplace. So if you want any old school Lake City once fired brass, anything that's come through the military, well, you're out of luck. And same thing with the ammo cans. Those are going to be gone as well. Now, how do we fix that? We get on the horn and write letters and send emails with the phone calls and everything to your senators and representatives in the House and tell them this is outrageous. If you're going to destroy that stuff, which poses no threat or no problem at all, it's been used for good purposes for decades, then we're going to ask you to destroy everything that the government has done with and try to explain that to the rest of the constituents. So remove this regulation. Get it changed in Department of Defense and get it done ASAP. Because this is important to us. We're already in a recession. Some of us are feeling it quite hard. All right? We're feeling it quite a bit. And to add this by yet again raising the price of ammunition, which is already out of sight, it's already difficult to find, is just another way for them to enact some sort of gun control. We have JG on line one calling from California. JG, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. What's happening?
Good, sir. I got a question. I'm in contact with Greg Evenson, Mark Hornacky, you know, Jack McLam, and a few other people. And I may be moving. What city in Nevada are you out of?
Where do I live?
Yeah, are you, do you have a business or something out of Nevada, you said, or something?
I live in Nevada. I live northwest of Las Vegas, about 45 minutes, in a town that's not actually a city, by the name of Pahrump, P-A-H-R-U-M-P.
Oh, okay, because, I'm a disabled veteran. I was here like about 5-6 years ago, and actually you had an assistant director by the name of Russ. Was it Russ or Russell?
I used to work with a fellow named Russ at,
I used to be at the gun range.
I don't contract with that same company any longer as of this last October. But yeah, Russ is a good guy. He's a guy that works for Front Sight Farms Training Institute.
There you go.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I was in contact with him, a few years ago before I came down with this, particular medical situation, which is now resolving, but I was going to apply for a firearms instructor and they were going to, talk to me about some kind of a deal or something where I could come in and, take the course because I had a mitigating limb problem at the time. But, I was wondering, I'm going to be living, maybe coming permanently to the Las Vegas area. May I meet with you or talk with you on the phone to get some advice on a couple of situations?
Yeah, sure. You know what? Just do this. Just email me bill@2aradio.com and I'll get back to you from there.
That's the only way to do it right now?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay,
I got to finish off the show, but I'll be happy to communicate with you through there.
Yes, sir. All right, I'll try to do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, JG. Thanks for the call.
Yes.
Okay, so back on this, we're talking about how the Department of Defense has decided to do away with the once fired brass casings from the military and ammo cans to be allowed to go into the general public that here in the States, so that we can actually get this, we can keep the cost of ammunition low and the way to cart it around simple, right? So we need to deal with that. Get a hold of your representatives and senators to help with that. And also let them know that just Attorney General Eric Holder in general is out of step with the American people and out of step with the Second Amendment and the D.C. versus Heller. They're looking to enact what is unconstitutional law. All right? So we need to deal with this. We need to deal with Eric Holder. Now, of course, he's always been anti-gun, so I'm sure he's happy to go about doing this. But yet he takes his direction from the president. So the president already knows that we don't want this stuff. We're going to have to let the legislature, the legislators know that whatever comes down the pike from the Oval Office, from Attorney General Eric Holder's office towards getting legislation written about this, we're not going to put up with. We need to stop that in its legislative tracks before it actually ever gets to a vote. All right? So a few closing comments when we come back from the break. Any last phone calls, if you'd like to give them, 800-313-9443. And we're going to hit a couple of things or what's going on around the state when we come back.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Karnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
In Tennessee, there is a bill going in front of the full House to repeal a piece of legislation. In Tennessee, if you're not allowed to carry a handgun into a bar or a restaurant that serves alcohol. So if you want to go with your family and go grab some Mexican food and they happen to serve cerveza, you can't bring your gun and defend yourself or your family in Tennessee. So there's a bill proposed to remove that so you can actually go into these bars and restaurants up to 11 p.m., I think it is, which is when most family time is by far done. So that's going in front of the full House of Nashville to remove that so you can still bring your gun and defend yourself and protect your family. If you believe in that, call your state representative. Let them know to support it. Also, in Knoxville, Tennessee, there was a trucker who fatally shot a man who was breaking into the cab of his tractor-trailer rig while he was sleeping. It's under investigation, but it looks as though it's going to be considered somewhere along the idea of the Castle Doctrine, because this guy was sleeping in his truck, which had a sleeper cab, which then, therefore, by definition, pretty much made it his home. Now, let's talk just a little bit about national gun control. We're going to talk about Canada. Canada's had some very lousy gun laws. About 10 days ago on Friday, March 6th, it came out. Let me just read this to you. From time to time, elected officials actually do research an issue, learn the facts, and take the appropriate action. Such is the case with efforts to scrap Canada's multi-billion dollar ineffective gun registry. On February 9, 2009, Gary Britscruz, a member of the Canadian House of Commons for the Conservative Party of Canada, introduced Bill C-301, an act to amend the Criminal Code and the Firearms Act, registration of firearms. This private member bill would bring an end to Canada's much maligned long gun registry. Okay, according to a recent article in Canada's National Post, you can go to nationalpost.com and research it. When the National Long Gun Registry was introduced some 14 years ago, they believed that actually the erroneous gun registration would help make Canada safer. Now, this particular guy, Mr. Brukritz, I don't know how you pronounce it, too many vowels and syllables, he now knows better. He said, quote, after many years of research, consultation, and more than 600 access to information requests as a member of parliament, I now know that nothing could be further from the truth. The gun registry has not saved one life in Canada and has not been a financial and has been a financial sinkhole, estimated to cost some $2 billion. Now, that's $2 billion over 14 years. Now, when we had that 10-year ban, the assault weapons ban, as they called it, that was proven to not show any benefit either or not have saved any other life. So let's get a hold of the people in D.C. that represent us, your senators, your representatives, and let them know the same thing. Canada realized it didn't work. We realized from the last ban that it didn't work. So let's not burden the people, the manufacturers, the industry, this economy as a whole with the same BS again. My name's Bill Carnes. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Tune in.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Enjoy your freedoms. The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.